visible digital bridges between doctors' surgeries and hospitals. One of these hospitals, the Royal Free in London, has already performed a successful trial using a new digital archive system in the radiography department. And when the entire computer network is installed across England, it'll make a patient's complete medical care, be it x-rays, blood tests or scans, accessible to health professionals on a computer. Sounds simple, but as Richard Granger is well aware, not least from the intense public criticism he's receiving in the press at the moment, it's a formidable task.
This is a task that's analogous to the construction of the railways in Victorian Britain, providing, in this case, the information highways and byways to pull billions of pieces of information together for everybody who uses the NHS in England. It's an enormous engineering task. It's also an enormous organisational change task and management task. And many people who might have heard a little bit about what we're doing in the NHS to bring the NHS into the digital age would think this is just about putting a few computers on a few doctors' desks. It isn't. It's about a fundamental modernisation of the way the NHS operates.
How many surgeries and hospitals are we talking about?
We're talking about around 9,000 locations that GPs operate from, and several hundred major hospital sites, around 10,000 community pharmacists. And in total, we're looking at, when this is completed, being able to move information between 28,000 places around the country.
We can see an example of this new system in front of us now. In this case, we've got two computer screens because the one on the right has got a digital image of a pelvis, it looks like, and the one on the left looks like it's got all the paperwork.
One of the things we're doing with many of the systems we're implementing is bringing together information from different sources and sometimes different media so that clinicians can make accurate and timely decisions without having to rummage through films and bits of paper and make phone calls. So what you can see on this system is, on the right-hand side, something that was previously an x-ray film, and on the left-hand side, things that were pieces of paper, all brought together into a pair of screens to support accurate and timely decision-making.
And even the doctor's signature in that case?
Yes, we can digitise doctor's handwriting.
Probably just as well. I'm just amazed it's not been done before, because everybody's, well, not everybody, but a lot of people have been using email for a long time now, and the computers to communicate. Why haven't the NHS done it sooner?
It's not as simple as email. This is about complex systems with data standards, linking up lots of different sites, and making sure that information is recorded in an accurate way to support clinical decision-making. So not as simple as email, not as simple as banking systems or airline reservation systems. It's a much more complicated environment, and the consequences of getting things wrong are far more severe.
One of the reasons that Brunel succeeded was because when he encountered problems, he devised ways of overcoming them and worked hard, because he had leaky tunnels, he had problems with ships, he had problems along the way. Have you had your Brunel equivalent of a leaking tunnel?
Well, whenever you put large IT systems in, you go through an evolutionary process where difficulties with the equipment and the design get driven out in the early stages of the delivery program. And I think it's important to recognise the parallels between the IT industry and civil engineering. Perhaps 100, 150 years ago, bridges fell down and tunnels collapsed, and the IT industry is still immature. We're very aware of the problems that occur. So we gradually connect up sites, we gradually take users on, we gradually add more functionality. So what we haven't done is say there will be 100 sites that get turned on a particular day and completely overstress the network.
So it is, in a way, a little bit like a big railway system. It is very like a railway system, because you're starting off with some main lines and then adding some branch lines, and then rather than try to do it all at once.
Yes, that's absolutely right. So the project I worked on before this was congestion charging. And what I don't think people realised was all the cameras were working for months before the scheme went live, so we drove a lot of risk out of what we were doing as a consequence. And we've been cautious with these systems in the NHS, because the consequence of them having major problems is it affects people's health and their lives. So if something has been delayed or put in more small chunks than was originally envisaged in the strategy document, which was the starting point for this program, then that's because we've decided that's a sensible thing to do.
But at least, having worked on the congestion charge system, you don't mind being unpopular.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I was behind the scenes on congestion charging, and there was not a single piece of publicity about the work that we were doing. The officers within Transport for London got most of the attention, and I've been astounded, given the positive contribution to everybody's health that these systems will make, and improvement to the working lives of around 800,000 people in the NHS. I've been astounded at the unpopularity of many of the things we're doing.
Richard Granger, IT Director for the NHS, on the surprisingly negative feedback he's encountered bringing health services into the digital age. And to discuss how problems can be overcome to ensure progress, he's joined me with our two other modern Brunels, Thames Water's Jeff Farrow and Phil Neddin from ARAP, who's building a major extension to Londonderry's Alt McGelvin Hospital. Richard, we'll begin with you, as we've just heard about what you've been doing. Now, new computer systems are often open to as much criticism as praise. How do you deal with it?
Some of the criticism is valid and well-informed, and you sometimes need to change what you're doing as a consequence. Some of it is as a consequence of anxiety, and you need to do a better job of communicating what you're doing. And some of it is because people's vested interests are deteriorating as a consequence of what you're doing. You know, if it's a company that is seeing reduced revenues because they're not delivering things, attacking what we're doing in some way, you have to...
It's a case of, well, they would say that, wouldn't they?
Yeah, and just keep quiet, keep protecting taxpayers' money, and keep them focused on delivering.
Now, you mentioned communication there. In Brunel's day, he had to do the equivalent of a PR campaign. I know you've been employed to get a job done, but how important is it nowadays to keep the press and public on side at the same time?
I think it's very important, but I think we also need to recognise that most major change programmes tend to be viewed with enormous suspicion, and after they've been delivered, after things work, they tend to be viewed with silence. It's perhaps part of the British psyche to view things negatively and then be entirely disinterested once they're in and working.
Phil, do hospital buildings attract the same sort of venom?
No, I think we're quite lucky, really, because I think the public at large are sympathetic when they know that there's a new hospital coming to their location. I think if you live next door, of course, to the new hospital, you might not be so sympathetic because you've got all the additional transport to deal with. But I am acutely aware that the public also understand that for every pound you spend on a building, it's not going directly into patient care, although you have to have the facility before you can produce the caring environment.
We mentioned, Jeff, in some of the engineering problems that, you know, you'd had and overcame when you were building the Ring Main. How did they manage to stay out of the press? Because you could sort of imagine Thames Water undergoing the same sort of problems that Richard's undergoing at the moment if they'd had found out halfway through, before it was completed, that, you know, you've got a leaky tunnel or you've got a problem getting through the stone.
I think it's a bit like the whole thing that we do. Most of our staff, we're a utility, so everything is underground. People don't see that we're there. We take water supply for granted, we take sewerage for granted. You turn your tap on, water comes out, you flush your loo and it goes away again. And it's a bit like that with the engineering, with tunnelling. I guess we were fortunate in that the problems we had were in places where people weren't actually looking. So very few people actually know we had any problems.
If those problems had got into the press, though, would it have affected what you were doing?
No, I don't think so. You tease out what's the right solution and then you do it. It would have made it perhaps slightly harder to do it, but I think we would have done the same thing no matter what.
Richard, are you envious of Jeff's low-profile project?
Yes, I am, because the effect of a toxic environment on a large programme is that it tends to be extremely dispiriting for the very committed team that are delivering things. And it unfortunately distracts from 90-plus percent of things which go well, which largely go unreported.
Sometimes people mistakenly think that everything that Brunel did was a success, yet he had some spectacular, quite public failures, lost a lot of his own money as well. Do you think it's a healthy situation nowadays that because often projects are so much money going into them that almost no one can afford to fail, Phil?
Yeah, well, failure is extremely expensive, and especially when you're involved in the public purse. You know, everything has to be auditable, and you have to be as right as you possibly can be. And I just wish sometimes we had a little bit more room to manoeuvre. We could take more risks. We could be a little bit more innovative. But in a hospital environment, we're forever trying to find the evidence to support the system or the environment that we're trying to...
I think that goes for everything we do, even going back slightly to where we were. We have other projects which are very much high profile. For instance, at the moment we're replacing a lot of the water mains in London, which can be quite disruptive. And that's, as I say, very high profile and involves a lot of communication with local people to keep the disruption to a minimum. Yes, things will always go wrong, but it's more about how we put them right, I think.
Well, Brunel had this reputation for rubbing people up the wrong way, especially his contractors. Can any of you relate to that? Phil, you're nodding your head.
Well, I mean, it's interesting that on the Renkioi project, there was a little bit of suspicion about how Brunel got to get the project in the first place. There's a bit of nepotism in there because his eldest sister was married to Benjamin Hawes, who was in the War Office at the time. And after they let the contract, I think there was a stiff exchange of letters between the War Office and Brunel, and Brunel basically said, look, to do a project like this, you either want me to fully control it or you don't. And I've done it now, so it's too late.
Do you have to have a touch of dictator in you? I'll address this specifically to Richard, if you don't mind, only because recently in the press you were compared to Napoleon Bonaparte.
Yeah, I think you have to be a strong leader. I wouldn't choose Napoleon as my
I don't think anybody would they?
although I understand he was similarly horizontally enhanced rather than vertically so. But I think you have to have broad shoulders and you have to accept that some things you do are not going to be the perfect decision. And if you do want to deliver large things that have a degree of innovation, you have to take some risks, and some of those risks will mature. And you know, in terms of tunnelling, it's fascinating to hear about the Thames Ring Main. Of course, other recent tunnelling activities in London, such as the train line out to Heathrow, where part of the terminal collapsed into it, I think also drilling through sand, and the problems on the Jubilee Line extension, to demonstrate there continues to be geological risk despite the tunnelling technology being well over 100 years old. And I'll just bring us back to the point I made earlier. The IT industry is a very modern industry, and we have an uphill struggle to explain to a large number of people, both members of the public and some so-called experts, that claims about things being entirely accurate and predictable around the delivery of these major systems are just fundamentally naive. And there will be bumps in the road as we go through these very large-scale deliveries.
And finally, and just briefly, do we agree then with this description of that engineers can prevent disease while doctors cure it, Phil?
I think that I don't know about preventing it. I think that what we've got are the systems that can help us break the chain of the transmission of infection. And I think that what we need to do is to use all the systems and all the technology that we can muster to support the microbiologists and the infection control teams in reducing that infection as much as we possibly can.
Sure. Two of the things that make most difference to our public health in the developed world compared to the third world are water supply and sewerage. We take those for granted, but if we took those away, it would be very much harder for the rest of the health professionals down the line.
Richard?
In terms of the engineering activity that I lead, one of my colleagues, an esteemed doctor, Samuel Gray, has a very powerful statement. Information is the enemy of disease. And we live in an information age, and we have these massive structures, hospitals, and really to get them to serve as a society best, we need to have information available for people to make accurate and timely decisions.
Richard Granger, Phil Neddin, Jeff Farrow, thank you all for taking part in our third outing of Britain's Modern Brunels. Next week... in